Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to this conference call on the final 2013 results we published earlier this morning. Sitting here with me are Mr. Feike Sijbesma, CEO and Chairman of the DSM Managing Board, Mr. Rolf-Dieter Zwalb, Chief Financial Officer and member of the DSM Managing Board, and Mr. Jos Ophey, Senior Vice President, Corporate Control and Accounting. They will elaborate on the announcement and after that, answer your questions. This call is scheduled for 60 minutes. As a reminder, today's presentation may contain forward-looking statements. In that regard, I would like to direct you to the disclaimers about forward-looking statements as published in the press release. Now I would like to hand over the call to Mr. Rolf-Dieter Zwalb.
Thank you, Dave. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us this morning, although slightly later than normal, but we wanted to allow you to also participate in the call of Solvay. Earlier today, we reported final audited results for 2013. We also issued our integrated annual report, which can be found on our corporate website. The final results confirm the preliminary unaudited results we published on 21st of January in 2014, and they are basically the same in terms of EBITDA. Total numbers the same for the company and also by individual segment, numbers are more or less the same as they were in January. We also repeat our outlook for 2014 as we published on that same date. The new information mainly refers to cash, and that is a very positive one. We had a very good cash generation in Q4, 426 million euro, due to a strong reduction, especially in working capital. This is almost half of the full year cash flow and more than double the year ago. For the full year, the cash generated from operating activities increased 22%. The second new information of importance is the dividend, and in line with our policy for a stable, preferably rising dividend, we are proposing to increase our dividend for the year with 10% from 1.50 euro to 1.65 euro per ordinary share. This is the fourth consecutive increase of our dividend. The acquisitions have performed well in quarter four as well as the full year. Martek, Fortitec, and Tortuga exceeded expectations. Ocean Nutrition Canada was confronted with market headwinds, as we discussed earlier, towards the end of the year. The integration of all the acquisitions is well advanced. At the publication of the preliminary results in January, we discussed the impact of the market headwinds in nutrition, weakness in vitamins and fish oil-based omega-3 dietary supplements markets in the U.S., soft demand in Western food and beverage markets, and lower vitamin E prices. We still see these market headwinds today, and we expect them to show their full impact in Q1. As we will implement the new accounting rules for joint ventures, the net result of our pharma activities and all other joint control joint ventures will be accounted for in the associates line as from this year. This means that the comparable EBITDA in 2013 from continuing operations after the deconsolidation of joint ventures amounted to 1,261,000,000 euros. We provided a restated 2013 figures by quarter today also in the press release as an annex. With these remarks, I want to keep it short and open the floor for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session. When you have a question, please press star one. Star one for questions. First one from Mr. James Knight from Exane. Please go ahead, Mr. Knight.
Morning, thank you for taking my questions. I'll start with three, a couple around omega-3 to start with, I think. Just reading through the presentation, the slide on omega-3, first bullet point says the omega-3 market has started to decline. I just wanted to be clear whether you're suggesting you see a secular decline in the market or a shorter-term decline. Maybe if you talk around that, could you talk around some of the competition that some people see from krill, et cetera, for fish-based omega-3? The second question on omega-3 is South American fish. I see that the slide on fish oil prices up to February, I think. Do you have any greater visibility today about what the harvest for last year was like and therefore where that's likely to go for the rest of 2014? Third question on nutrition. I mean, it's very clear that it's a soft start to the year. I wonder if you could sort of quantify that a little bit? How should we think about human nutrition volumes in the first and second quarter, and the impact on nutrition as a whole, just so we make sure we get the phasing of our forecast right for nutrition through the quarters of 2014? I'll stick there. Thank you.
Okay, let me please start with some answers, and may Feike may want to add there. On the omega-3 decline in the market, we say U.S. Fish oil-based omega-3 market has started to decline after decades of strong growth. Now, of course, that is something which we see at the moment, but we are not just going to accept that and look at it. So we will, of course, work together and are working together to change that situation again. As we discussed earlier, that had partially to do with the prices, strong price increases last year because of the fish oil price increase from Peru. But that we have to fight. That brings me, I think, directly to the second question on the fish oil harvest. As to our knowledge, the harvest has been normal again in Peru in the last winter season. But unfortunately, the prices have not shown the full decline yet towards the levels we saw before last year. It's difficult to say what the future will bring, but that is what we have at the moment as a reality. The phasing of quarters, you don't expect me to give a quarterly outlook, but we have been pretty clear that all the headwinds which we saw in Q4 really will show their impact also fully in Q1. So the vitamin E price, although we announced price increases, but that takes time to implement, as we know from the past, but we are pushing for it even at the expense of volume, which of course short term also doesn't help EBITDA, but still we need and want to increase the vitamin E price, but at the moment we are at a level which is clearly below average last year. And the issues around dietary supplements and fish oil we just discussed also show their impact in Q1 fully. So from that angle, I think your phasing question is spot on, and you should not expect a strong recovery or whatever in that direction in Q1 at all.
Thank you, Rob Dieter. Could I just quickly follow up on one part of that, which is if you look at the sequential volumes for human nutrition in Q4, I think it would help if we knew roughly when in the quarter you started to see the decline so we could pro forma it for the first quarter.
Yeah, the omega-3 started already in Q3, as we discussed even at the capital market days. The soft food and beverage markets continue in principle, as you can see also in the last weeks with the publications of Kraft Foods, Kellogg's, GNC in the U.S. For dietary supplements, Unilever. I mean, they all talk the same language in the direction of soft food and beverage markets in the Western markets, Western Europe, North America. On the dietary supplements, it was more prominent in the second part of Q4. And, of course, that continues fully now in Q1. So there the impact on Q1 is most likely even higher than it was in Q4. And one, of course, I didn't mention, the currency has not improved yet. So our assumption even for the full year, as we discussed in the outlook in January, where we used the dollar at 136, at the moment we are even at 137 if you take it really by the cent. But the euro has not weakened, the dollar not improved, to a certain extent to our amazement. But okay.
Okay.
This is our assumption, and there also at the moment we do not see an improvement versus Q4 on exchange rates.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe to add a couple of things, although Wolf Dieter said most of it, but we do not see, don't interpret this language as that we see a second decline or whatever, nothing in addition than the decline on the omega-3 I'm talking about now, that we saw in Q4. Two effects here. One is the omega-3 started already in Q3, partly driven by the whole pricings which we discussed before. And although we expect some relief of that in 2014, we don't see it coming back yet at the levels which it was in the beginning of 2013 or 2012. We need to see how that develops. Dietary supplements and omega-3 partly goes into dietary supplements as a total. Yeah, that was stronger in the second half of the quarter and continues now in the first quarter. Although we see in terms of reactions, quite some reactions in media and televisions, etc. at this moment or people say, hey, what about those studies which came out? Those are not correct. Certain things need to be reversed. Composition of food and all those things is not the way we want to have it, etc. Does that immediately affect now that demand recovers? No. But I see on the longer run here, I expect here a bouncing back. But I don't know when that will happen. Yeah, so that has also a consequence of the distribution over the quarters, as Rolf Dieter indicated.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, Mr. Mutlu Gundogan on behalf of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Four questions, if I may. First on D&A, I see that these amounted some 155 million in the fourth quarter, while this was still 136 in Q3. I was wondering if we should take the 155 as a run rate for 2014, i.e. around 620 on a full year basis. Secondly, a bit of a nitty-gritty question, but I saw that there was an impairment in the non-exceptional items on nutritional products. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. And then thirdly, the outlook. I was a bit surprised because, if I'm not mistaken, you usually provide an outlook on a division level at the full year results. So I was wondering why you haven't done so this year. And then finally, on the dividend, I was wondering why you had decided to increase this by 10%, especially given the recent profit warning. I was wondering what your thinking behind it is. Thank you.
Let me start with the dividend. Well, you know, our dividend policy, at least stable, preferably rising. And, yeah, we have, of course, this early publication, the profit warning, as you call it, in January. But don't forget, I mean, the profit EBITDA increased 18% for 2013 versus 2012. So on the back of that, we found it fully justified to also increase our dividend, which is 10%, so half of the increase in EBITDA. The outlook statement, yeah, in principle, we have been, well, let's call it, we are cautious, and we have no reason at the moment to change it. The currencies have not changed, and we want to stay at the moment at least a little bit more careful in being too specific by the various segments. We have discussed nutrition in quite some detail, so I think you get enough indication there. On performance materials, you remember that we had an excellent quarter, even a very good quarter at least, quarter four, 2013, much better than previous quarter four, as we did not see much seasonality in coming down in the last quarter. And we know, of course, that the polymer intermediates is at a low level, so I think you have all the information which you can use even with that simple outlook statement as we put it out now. And we give you the currency assumptions for that, which of course, if you have different assumptions, you can do the calculations to update that. The impairment on nutrition, which is mentioned, is referring to an investment in an R&D project in a new technology, which at the end turned out was not successful. And then you have to impair because we have very specific following IFRS rules on when we have to capitalize R&D and when we expense it. So in the early stages, we expense it. When it comes to later stages where you think, yeah, it will really be effective, then a capitalization sets in. But yeah, even in that case, you can be wrong and it may still die off at some moment because it's a technical issue which cannot be solved anymore. Or the business case is gone for whatever market reasons. But that is the impairment you were referring to. On the depreciation and amortization charge in Q4 versus previous quarters, the increase, I must admit, I cannot immediately answer now to without guessing too much. So I think we will have to come back to that.
Maybe one thing to add connected to the dividend, it was why increase the dividend next to the fact that it is fully in line with our policy, like Rolf said, has to do with yield on investments in the company and our own policy. But obviously, we did not like what happened in the course of the fourth quarter, and which is continuing the first quarter. the confidence is for me very high into the future of our nutrition business. It's a little bit exceptional what's happening at the same moment. It's a fact, but the currencies are hitting us whilst we see effects on vitamin E prices, whilst we see the dietary supplements, whilst we see a soft food and beverage market. All four are totally unrelated, have nothing to do with each other. Happening all four in the course of fourth quarter, absolutely true. Continuing the first quarter, absolutely true. Is it exceptional having all four at the same moment? For me it is, because they are unrelated. Let's look to all four. Currencies, like Rolf Dieter said, to be honest, but here we need economists on the call, but I don't understand why the euro is so strong. For me, for sure not due to the competitiveness of Europe. Maybe the interest is still too high, but I don't understand it. I see some companies indicate that they expect a lower dollar over a lower, weaker euro over the year. If I look to vitamin E, there were two effects happening. One is in the first half of the year on the demand side. That is recovering. Also, we saw that in the fourth quarter. That came together with a new entrance. That is a very unlucky combination. A weakening in the first half of the year together with a new entrance. That is not what you want to have at the same moment. But volumes are picking up. And we saw that already in the fourth quarter. And I'm not so sure what will happen further with competition, because especially the one competitor we talk about is not selling and nor producing, nor having finished its factory. So I don't see prices increasing at this moment, and they are clearly lower than last year. But I don't know what will happen. We continue to decrease our cost price. We continue to differentiate ourselves, and we need to see if volumes further grow, what happens here? At least I don't see that this new entrant is finishing now its factory. If you look to soft food and beverage markets, and also in the fourth quarter a little bit further into the benefit of private label, and we are stronger positioned in A-brands than private label, but at the end, the A-brands will keep their share, the Nestle's, PepsiCo's, Coke's, Unilever's, etc. So at the end of the day, that will be remaining a very important customer base for us. And if I then look to dietary supplements and food fortifications, etc., of course, that was a market sensitive for these announcements and studies, etc. But that can turn also, because a couple of things in the studies we disagree with, and we found here even irresponsible. And we see that coming out in this January, February, it's not influencing the market immediately. We need to see. But I have all trust that we can further grow, also in the dietary supplements, also in omega-3 globally. By the way, the omega-3 for infant formula, so the MyTech business, is growing well and doing very, very well. Basically, all acquisitions are doing well. Tutuka is above expectations. Fortitec is doing very well. Martec is doing very well. The only one, of course, who is influencing this is Kenji Nash, is biomedical, is doing well. The only one is being influenced by this is the ocean nutrition business. So if you look to a couple of the elements I went through, sorry for taking so long, but I think there is a high confidence in a strong hard work on this side to further grow our nutrition business. We are still in this range of 20-23%. We want to grow our business 2% above global GDP. That we continue as our target. So there's a strong effort on this side. And this nutrition business was a star in DSM and will continue to be a star. And that confidence, not only based on willingness, but I think also on underlying facts and actions, gives us the confidence that we can increase dividends.
Okay. Maybe, thank you very much.
Maybe, Mutlu, one word then on the DNA. I think you should also look all at the restatement and not at the numbers which we are publishing, because we forward looking with all the joint venture control chain deconsolidation and the deconsolidation of our pharma business, we'll have to look at the restatement. There you can see that the rate in quarter four was 140 million DNA, and it was 123 in quarter three, and you see also that the changes are, the main one, roughly 10 million, is in nutrition, and that most likely has to do with the purchase price allocation finalization or almost finalization of Tortuga. And of course there is some up and down also quarter to quarter, as you can see. But if you take the 140, roughly, the second increase is in polymer intermediates. Then if you take the 140, then maybe this is an assumption you can take as a run rate at the moment. But there are fluctuations also quarter on quarter.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next question, Mr. Rakesh Patel on behalf of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi there. Just a couple of questions, if I could. First of all, I know you talked a lot about the growth that you've been seeing in the acquisitions. I just wonder if you could give us the pro forma growth, both in Q4 and for the full year, just so we can see how that's been evolving. And then secondly, just on vitamin prices, continues to be very weak and has been kind of a drag on your results for quite some time. So I actually wondered if you'd actually thought of other ways to perhaps extract shareholder value, perhaps maybe by looking to exit that business. Be interested in your thoughts on that. And then finally, am I right in assuming there's still nothing new to be elucidated on the Capro business? Thanks very much.
Okay. Yeah. Correct on the last one, nothing new. And you know that we only will say something when there is something on our plan to reduce the exposure to the merchant market, which we can publish, and we will not give interim updates on the way we are working on this subject matter.
But our strategy is totally unchanged.
Yeah, the strategy is unchanged. The vitamin prices, I mean, the main one we have been discussing is, of course, vitamin E in
exactly.
The last period. And there we discussed earlier on a question the plan to increase prices now and push for that also strongly, even at the expense of volume, if that is needed, because we want to get it stabilized and up later. And by the way, it has stabilized so far, but at a low level, lower than we were last year. Now, exiting the vitamin business, I think, that's a very strange question for me. I mean, we have built a nice big nutrition portfolio. In that portfolio, because of the acquisitions, the impact of the vitamins has come down, so we are not depending anymore on vitamins like we were maybe 5-6 years ago. Only we have a much broader portfolio, a very nice position in a broad ingredients portfolio, 100 active ingredients roughly, and forward into forms and delivery systems, premixes and blends with Fortitech acquisition. Now to take a part out would be completely counterproductive in that sense. On the acquisition growth, I can only refer to the statements we make. Martek, of course, is in the meantime fully integrated, but we reported in the results report that the infant formula business is growing nicely, especially, of course, outside the U.S., where we expect it, where we want it. This was also the main reason for the acquisition. We also published even every quarter in the last year the sales and the EBITDA of the acquisitions of Fortitech and Tortuga, and up to and including quarter two, we also published Ocean Nutrition Canada separately. After that, it was also so much integrated that we stopped separately mentioning numbers, but we have discussed the omega-3 fish oil business at quite some detail. That's what we can give you. So a good performance, as Fike said, in basically all the acquisitions, with the only exception being Ocean Nutrition Canada for the moment. Martek doing well, infant formula, synergies delivery in sales around the world is very nicely developing. And Fortitech and Tortuga, in the first couple of quarters, Tortuga now 3 quarters, Fortitech 4 quarters we published. We also made you aware earlier that Tortuga has some seasonality in Q4 and Q1, low season, Q2 and Q3, high season, which you also see in the numbers. So that's I can maybe say on your question there.
Yeah, maybe one small addition on prices. We're talking about not vitamins broadly, but mainly about vitamin E. Secondly, vitamins are very important, and we are sometimes described in our nutrition business as a vitamin company. It's all correct, but what is also correct is that vitamins account for 38% of our total nutrition portfolio. That means that 62% is other products, like polyunsaturated fatty acids, like probiotics, like taste enhancers, etc., etc. So the portfolio is broad. That makes us also strong. Of course, the margins are lower, and if you are around 20 or 20.5, that is lower than 22.5. That is true. But still, this 20-23% bracket, which we want to maintain, is not a bad profitability bracket to be in. By the way, if you compare that with some of our competitors into food ingredients or nutritional ingredients, I think about a company in the United States which bought some companies, a big company, or in Germany, etc., then our margins are not bad. And if we can continue to further grow this business, and again, underlying with the increase of the number of people in the world and living increasingly in urban areas where they become buyers instead of producers themselves, I think we can grow this business. And of course, a few percentage in profitability means a lot. But still, if we are in that bracket and can grow the business, we can generate a lot of value also for our shareholders. So that is our commitment.
So it's fair to say that, you know, over the midterm, you think you will return back to growth in vitamins, and we should see some benefit from that.
Well, let's be honest, in this fourth quarter, we had 3% organic growth. That is less than what we want, but it is more growth than the world economy is growing. This year, we want to grow also clearly above the world economy. By the way, if you look to this year, take the EBITDA last year, which we published today, even over the quarters. But if you take the EBITDA last year and correct it for all the joint ventures, etc., then the 13-14 EBITDA becomes 12-61. So if everything is equal, you are on 12-61 in 2014. If everything is equal, then 13. If you have a hit of 70 million due to the currencies, and the hedge, of course, is worse, half is hedged, than the hedge we could do in 2012 for 2013, clearly. So 70% hit if the currencies are where they were in January. So then you're on 11 something. And we said we target this to achieve the same. And that would mean an underlying growth, what is it, 5-6-6, so only 6%.
Of EBITDA.
So of EBITDA growth, which I think is in this economic climate not a bad growth. Is that eaten up by currencies? Yes. Can we compensate at this moment that currency effect next to this growth? But on top of that, yeah, that we don't see. And yeah, a good one who can predict how it really goes with the currencies. What we have seen over the years is that we were, of course, hit by the strengthening of the Swiss franc. And now later on with the euro, I'm sure we get different times also.
No, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Next question, Mr. Martin Rüdiger from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I have three questions. First, on dietary supplements, what is the lead time between the production of DSM's products for dietary supplements for the U.S. market and the effective sales of dietary supplements on the shelf in the U.S. at retailers? I would like to understand how it's possible that negative opinions on the social media made in mid-December can have such an impact on your Q4 sales. The second question is on the impairment in the pharmaceutical products, which was effectively 152 million euros in Q4. Why is this figure even higher than the 120 million impairment you have mentioned during the publication of the deal with JLL on Patheon in November? And the third question is regarding your handout on page 29. It's regarding the human nutrition business. Can you explain why the severe winter in the U.S. will impact the human nutrition business in Q1? Thank you.
Okay. Rolf Dieter will do the impairment. The other two, the winter, we hear that everywhere, that the winter, severe winter in the U.S. keep people at home more than normally. And if people are at home, they buy less. This is happening, by the way, I expect that also in other businesses. And of course, people will not die and they will continue to eat, etc. But they will most likely buy at other places sometimes, or maybe partly buy other stuff, or use also things they have already stored in the house or whatever. But we clearly get all kind of signals, although I'm lacking here exact data. But I expect that the severe winter has impact on several businesses. At the end, that will recover. The second thing is, I don't know the lead times, but I think it is at least a couple of weeks, if not more, for our ingredients towards being sold on the shelf. If you see in the pack on page 24, you see the December-November sales differences in several vitamins, so that's the multivitamins and the omega-3, which had already a decline in somewhat in November and further in December. And most of the studies came out in December, that's true, but there were already some signals, rumors, things, and studies are in preparations in the course of November. But the real studies came out in December, and immediately you see in the figures, a little bit to our amazement also, the fierce reaction on it. But people have bought clearly less, which immediately stops for the fast moving and the retail companies. They immediately react, canceling all orders. And that has a big effect. If you miss a couple of weeks of orders, that retailers say, oh, wait a minute, stop our supply chain, because I don't know whether I sell all the things I have in the store. Of course, that has an effect. In itself, the whole lead time is of course, several weeks, but you can have a rapid effect on stopping, let's say, your own supply and business.
Yeah, it has, by the way, not a negative impact. It means also that the inventories are higher than planned because you produced already, expecting orders to come or even taking the orders which were in the books already. And that also is one reason why our working capital is, in, especially in nutrition, at the end of the year, relatively high again. Although we had a pretty good quarter in the total company, I should say, on the cash flow because of working capital reduction. But this one didn't help. And as Falk said, I mean, cutting orders, canceling orders which are already placed, you will not, as a supplier, then just ship it anyway. Because you also have a relationship here. On the DPP or the pharmaceutical impairment, yes, we indicated 120 expected impairment in quarter in the announcement of the transaction in November. It's now posted as 152. There's a couple of changes. The most important one, by the way, is exchange rate, but the biggest one is the start of this new company in financing the transaction on the bond market was extremely successful. So the bond roadshow and the taking up the debt in the last weeks was so successful that we discussed with our partners whether we should reduce the seller's note, which was part of the transaction, and we did so. So, in fact, we de-risked the transaction by taking off the $200 million seller note, the U.S. dollar, which we announced in November, $125 in cash at closing, and only keep $75 as a seller note in the company. We think this is a good decision to de-risk it. Also, it means that the interest cost of the new company will be lower. But, of course, on our side, it means that the interest, which was net present valued for the book value and then the impairment consequence is also lower, and that's why the impairment is higher. But in principle, it de-risks the transaction for DSM and it brings $125 million at closing immediately.
Thank you.
Which otherwise would have come much later.
Yeah, over the years. or later at the end of the period. But it has a consequence because we don't get the interest, of course, on that, which was an attractive interest rate of 10.75%. But it de-risks the transaction and gives us immediate cash, and that's the objective, I think, and that was a good decision, but it has that consequence.
Thank you.
Next question, Mr. Andreas Heine, on behalf of Barclays. Please go ahead, sir.
Three questions. The first is on the disclosure. You were more open in giving details on the nutrition business, which is very helpful. Will you continue to do so in the coming quarters so that we can follow what's going on in the four different difficult areas? The second is I will probably not get from your numbers how big the impact of the four unrelated impacts in Q4 were, but if I may do a ranking, could you confirm whether this is correct, that vitamin E has the highest impact, followed by dietary supplements, third, food and beverages, and that the smallest impact was from omega-3? And last thing, in the preliminary results, you were stating that these unrelated effects are all temporary and will recover soon, and now we are 6 weeks on, further on. You have repeated the outlook. Do you think, as there was not a steep recovery yet, that the outlook looks now more ambitious than 6 weeks ago? Thanks.
Yeah, on the last one, yeah, I don't think you should change outlook on a short-term basis like 5 or 6 weeks. That for me doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, I think we did not see any different development now in the last weeks that we expected. We also indicated when we discussed it in January and also especially in January that it will take some time. We talked always about the price increase announcement of vitamin E will take 2 to 3 months to be implemented. We said also that negative media publicity like the Enough is Enough story in the United States will take 8 to 10 weeks to get out of, out of memory and be replaced by positive news. That is not new at all. All of that hasn't changed. So on that side, I don't think there is a difference. Yeah, on the ranking, let me first say our vitamin E, as you know, goes mainly in animal nutrition, and animal nutrition, different from the first three quarters, had a good fourth quarter. So in the fourth quarter, the vitamin E price decline in animal nutrition was fully compensated by good volume growth there. So if I combine that and say animal nutrition as such had a good quarter in line with expectations, so I would not rank that number one. Now, the ranking of the others is difficult to say. Omega-3, dietary supplements, food and beverage markets. We disclosed already in the previous call in January that out of the 35 or 36 million difference, 35, I think, between Q3 and Q4, that roughly 10 million is currency, that roughly 6 million is the seasonality of Tortuga, and then there was a technical accounting effect at the year end, so about 20 million, 20, 21, 22 can be explained by those changes. And then there is a 10 to 15 million left coming from the business effects, the headwinds, as we have discussed them, which if you want, it's difficult to rank there, yeah. Which one is 4 million or 5 million, and so on.
And some of those effects also half a quarter.
Yeah, some came later in the quarter. Now, on the nutrition disclosure, let me first say maybe we can make a compliment to ourselves sometimes. We listen to you. So we
make compliment to them and not to ourselves.
and we increase the disclosure because that we heard a lot in meetings, on roadshows in the last weeks, and I think on the presentation to investors, those sheets will always be adapted to the need of the quarters. What needs to be discussed? What is new? I think in the disclosure in the press release as such. What you see now as a structural disclosure, I guess you can assume that it will be also the one we will do in the future.
Thanks.
Next question, Mr. Oliver Rief from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi there. Most of my questions have been answered. Just one on nutrition. So relative to the Q4 number for EBITDA of 208, just thinking about the run rate into Q1, you mentioned that the pressure's continuing. Are there any other positive or seasonal factors or exceptional impacts to bear in mind which would help sequential growth Q1 versus Q4?
Of course, volumes we want to grow. Of course, prices, now you need to see whether you compare Q1, Q1 or Q1, Q4, because prices will be clearly lower than Q1 last year, but we do not see that vitamin E prices are further dropping now, although we will have it for the full quarter. So some of the effects you see we have now for the full quarter, currencies also one for the full quarter. And if you look to the total business, you see that we want to compensate this with volume growth, both in human health and in animal health, if you compare that with Q4. Now, what does that mean? That we need to see over the quarter, but obviously some of the effects will be there now for the full first quarter, and yeah, you should not you should take that into consideration.
But I don't think you expect us now to give you a number for Q1. We will not go that direction. But I think we have made very clear that the headwinds continue in the Q1, and partly even they affect full Q1, and in Q4 they affected less than the quarter. Currencies, of course, do not help us at the moment. I mean, at the moment we are even at 137. That's, I think, it's pretty clear what you try to say here without giving a number now.
Thanks very much.
Next question, Mr. Patrick Lambert from Nomura. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good morning, guys. A few questions. The first one, could you give us a volume outlook for animal nutrition in 2014? I think there's good economics for farmers. And you mentioned that since Q3 2013 you saw some rebound. I just wanted to see globally by region what you see in animal nutrition volumes. Second question is you don't comment too much on prices for vitamin A. Has that really stabilized? What do you see there? That third question, could you help us also getting some idea of omega 3 supplements pricing at retail level? I know that was part of the big issue on volumes for you guys, wanted to see if there's some actions being taken at the retail level to ease these pressures. And the last questions regarding how does your omega 3 order book looks like? Thanks.
Animal nutrition, maybe first, animal nutrition volume outlook. I think what we have seen in Q4 is a good volume development. Last year, as you may remember, we had a couple of diseases around the world in poultry, in China in April, May, in Mexico later in the year, in Southeast Asia in aquaculture. And so we expect, of course, not knowing whether there will be other diseases this year, but on a healthy basis, let me say it like this, we would expect good volume growth in animal nutrition in the year.
Good meaning.
But I also mentioned earlier that we will not push volume at the expense of pricing. We want to implement our price increases in vitamin E, even at the expense of volume. So that, of course, balance we have to keep. On vitamin E prices, I can refer to the page in our presentation to you, which is page 23, where we show you the pricing basically until February, the curve.
I was talking about vitamin A.
A, oh.
Yeah.
I understood E.
Sorry.
not spectacular differences in A. There are always some fluctuations, but no.
No pickup. In prices.
It's a little bit, but not. And omega-3 retail pricing. What we learned about August, September last year was that because of the fish harvest in Peru and later and later the price increases which came to us and we passed on to our customers, and then they also landed in the shelf. We even had the impression that the retail increased the prices more than needed to expand margin. That landed with the consumer in an unfavorable way. Price increases in retail were something like 25-30%. And but that means in reality, if you come from a price, I don't know exactly, of course, but I guess I'm not totally off. If the price before the price increases was, say, at $9.99 or whatever for a pack of omega-3 capsules, and then with the 25-30%, you get to something like $12 to $13 per pack, usually for a two-month supply, which is then the absolute numbers of price levels there.
But has retail taken some actions on those prices?
Yes, what I heard is that there have been rebates or special offers to counteract the situation.
And your order book for Omega 3, how does it look?
Yeah, it does not go at this moment with a clear order book. People are looking, everybody have seen the developments in especially December. So you can expect that retailers and therefore the whole value chain is a little bit careful not to overcommit themselves at this moment. So everybody is taking a cautious stand or differently to take a short-term stand. So, of course, there is some short-term ordering not to overcommit themselves. Nobody of the retailers missed, of course, what happened in December, partly also by their own omega-3 price increases during already the end of Q3. And everybody's trying to counter that because the so-called gain they have by passing on the prices was for them also fully compensated by the volume loss. And nobody liked that. So we see some countering actions. And I think the question now is to what extent that will recover. We do not see a further decline from here, so that is good.
Mm-hmm.
Although we have a bigger effect because we have now a full quarter, but we do not see a further decline. And I want to be careful in this call also before I talk about really recovery. So I don't want to do that because I want to be careful here, but I don't see a further decline.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Next question, Ms. Carol Chan from UBS UK. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I just have one question on your operating working capital. Could you talk about what has driven the improvement there and if the current operating working capital to sales level ratios is sustainable? Thank you.
The improvement, of course, we had a lot of push in the company to reduce working capital. I can say basically that all the businesses in the materials arena and also in pharma, they reached their targets, as I earlier mentioned, nutrition not completely, but still that was a very strong improvement. What, of course, also helped is December was partly nutrition with all the discussions we had, but also partly in the other parts of the company. A lower sales month, so you have lower receipts at the end of the quarter. That is, of course, something you always have to follow. March typically is a pretty strong sales month, and then receipts at the end of March are usually pretty much higher than they were at the end of December. That is a quite normal effect you have every time. But we continue to push working capital also for this year, and really want to keep that in reasonable shape. Now, you should not forget the way we calculate working capital percent of sales, the number we publish is based on the last quarter times 4 sales. It's not based on annual sales, so just always have to keep in mind. If you benchmark other companies, you have to check these definitions.
Okay, and what kind of normalized ratios are you targeting?
I think at the current mix of businesses, which is a very important assumption, because we have a very wide spread of working capital ratios. In polymer intermediates, we are in the 7-8% range of sales. In nutrition, we are at 30+. So at current mix, the ratio for DSM will be around 21.
Okay.
Plus minus 1% point. But if the mix changes, mix has a tremendous impact on this ratio.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, Mr. Sebastian Satz from HSBC London. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good morning. I have two questions left, please. The first one is on performance materials. I was wondering whether you could comment a little bit on the trends you're seeing in the different regions and different end markets. Specifically, I'm interested in China in general and construction in Western Europe, but any other comment would be helpful as well. And the second question is on your innovation division. Could you please comment on the likely impact of the EPA proposals on your joint venture with Poet and the outlook here? Thank you very much.
Yeah, on performance materials, the European building construction market is still difficult.
Yeah.
That is mainly affecting our composite resins business. If I look at the engineering plastics, the polyamide 6 value chain remains under pressure. Benzene prices have increased again recently, and that, of course, is a difficulty there. In the specialty areas of performance materials, we see healthy growth. So this is then the high specialty engineering plastics. This is the Dyneema, also the high-end functional materials in resins. Those specialties really show good development, as they did last year. The difficult one is basically still composite resins in the building construction market, very much European-based, but also outside Europe not so strong. And in general, I think the weaker or not-so-specialty parts of the portfolio show they have more problems and more issues around the world. But the rest depends partly also on the economic developments. Automotive, yeah, it's difficult to say. Some take pretty positive assumptions for automotive this year. Let's hope so. But the trading at the moment, I think, is reasonably good there.
On the EPA, indeed, there are some discussions within and by the EPA about the RFS law and the total volumes allocated to oblige mixing of first and second generation of biofuels. Due to the almost zero production which was there in 2013, because nobody had started up his factory yet, and there was a clear volume constraint in 2013 to mix, but of course, if there is no supply, you cannot hold people responsible for mixing. They decreased the volume for 2014, still above the level of production, so no concerns. But of course, the question is what they will do for the other years, and that will obviously determine the speed of which new factories will start up and licenses will be or can be given by us. I have to say, a little bit conflicting signals from the EPA. 2-3 weeks ago, that's 2 weeks ago, the boss of the EPA gave a very positive statement. Although a month ago, I was more concerned about the statements. So this is real governmental policy in the United States, which A, I don't determine, B, it's very difficult to judge. So far, I assume that there will be room for mixing and for licensing. We are starting up our factory in the course of Q2. So especially towards Q3, we need to see where we are. Then you see also a little bit how the others started up. And most likely that will also drive the EPA what kind of levels they set the new requirements. That is what I can say so far.
Okay,
thank you very much. Could I just follow up on chemical demand in China in general? Sorry, I think you haven't commented on that.
Chemical demand in China? Well, no specific things we see, what we hear and what you see also, that all emerging economies, Brazil, India and China, are slowing down somewhat. Although we don't see specifics in our business, to be honest. But, of course, we are aware about the overall trend in China. By the way, it remains that the high growth economies are growing higher than the other markets in the world, so we remain committed to those, even if the growth levels would reduce. I don't see a big impact at this moment, but I read the newspapers as you do, and I think underlying maybe one of the issues is, does anybody has a real good feeling about the total financial situation at lower governments in China and how much leverage or not leverage that is? But I do not have a better view on that one than you would have.
Thank you very much.
Time. I think we have to conclude the meeting. So maybe, Roldis, you can give a few final remarks.
Yeah, let me then just conclude the meeting with some remarks. Of course, we are firmly committed to continue our strategy, which we have published some years ago, and that will and will continue to deliver value to all of you and our stakeholders and shareholders through our strong market positions and also our exposure to very important global mega trends. On the back of that and our confidence also for the future, as one other reason, we increased the dividend by 10%. But on the short term, we will, of course, continue to focus on the operational performance of our businesses, the integration of the acquisitions, the profit improvement programs that we have announced, and some intensification of our R&D efforts, but not on more big acquisitions, as we have said before. So with that, I want to close the call and thank you all for your attention today.